Well, good morning, everyone. Thanks for sharing your morning with us. The congregation gathering on Sunday morning is always such a joy. Of course, we have our announcements. Holy Mother's Helping Hands continues, food and clothing for the less fortunate. We're 2.5 months into our food drive in cooperation with the Atlanta Community Food Bank. Our goal is 500 pounds of food and $1,800 in donations by December 31st. Now, you will note that the box here in the lobby of the chapel is full, but the box in the sun porch of the monastery is still only half full. So we have been promised that those boxes will be picked up sometime soon, but we have two replacement boxes. Please do be mindful of the Holy Mother's Helping Hands for the rest of this month. Each week's e-news has details and links if you want to contribute online. It's easy to do. Flyers that specify what food is needed and in what kind of containers are in the lobby next to the Atlanta Community Food Bank box. Also, there's a clothes rack on the monastery sun porch for donations of warm winter clothing. So if you care to contribute to that, that'll be most gratefully received. As most of you know by now, Swami Sarvadevanandaji will be with us from Thursday, December the 20th, that's this coming Thursday, to Saturday the 22nd. On Thursday evening, the Swami will answer the question, why is Swami Vivekananda so relevant today? From 6:30 to 8 p.m., he will be at the Global Mall on Jimmy Carter Boulevard in Norcross. Tickets for the event are $10 and include dinner. Reservations are encouraged. Flyers are on the table next to the Atlanta Community Food Box. The Swami also will give talks here in the chapel on Friday evening at 7 p.m. and on Saturday morning, December the 22nd, at 11 a.m. On Friday evening, after the Swami's talk, he'll speak right after Arati from 7 to 7:45, then questions and answers. And then at 8 p.m., we'll go, and on that Friday evening, we'll go in and have a potluck supper and reception for him. Any of you who want private spiritual instruction from the Swami, please let me know by email right away so that can be scheduled. You can email me from the website. Otherwise, it's very easy to remember, shankara@vedanta.org. Shankara@vedanta.org is the email address. Now, I have a little bit of unhappy news. I did not take time this past week because of the press of other activities. I did not take time to prepare part two of this talk on the Wizard of Oz. That will be delivered next Sunday, December the 23rd, part two of the last Sunday's talk, Swamiji's Raja Yoga and the Wizard of Oz, the story bound told. And I regret that, but it was unavoidable. On December 24th, the day after that, that Monday, we'll have our Christmas Eve worship and celebration from 7 to 8 p.m. here in the chapel. This will be followed by prasad, whatever we offer to the Lord Jesus Christ here will be offered to you as prasad. There will also be caroling and other Christmas festivities in the monastery until about 9 or 9:30 p.m. If there is anyone who would like to sing with us that evening, please do let me know, either by email or just talk to me about it today. We sing the regular Christmas carols, and we would like to have someone, for example, to sing the Ave Maria. If someone is capable of singing the Ave Maria, that would be just delightful. As it happens, Holy Mother's birthday celebration also falls in December this year, on the 30th. So Holy Mother's birthday celebration is on December the 30th. Brother Dhruva will offer us a talk on Sri Sharada Devi, then perform her puja. We'll start at 11 a.m. that morning here in the chapel. At 12:30 p.m., we'll move to the monastery for our potluck prasad lunch. And then again, we need singers for that day. Dhruva likes to have singing during the puja, before and during the puja. So anyone who wishes to sing for Holy Mother's puja, please let us know. December 31st to January 1st, we'll have our midnight meditation. Starts at 11:30 p.m. and goes to 12:06 a.m. the following morning, followed by fellowship and snacks in the monastery. Now that's 36 minutes. We'll sit here from 11:30 p.m. On the 31st until 12:06 a.m. on January 1st in silent meditation, wishing one another Happy New Year as that time arrives. On January 1st, later that same day, we'll offer our observance of Kalpataru Day. That will take place from 2:30 to 3:30 p.m. As for those of you who aren't familiar with Kalpataru Day, it is the day on which Sri Ramakrishna revealed the majesty of his divine incarnation by offering liberation to about 30 householder devotees who had come to visit him at Kashipur Garden House on that January 1st. He was feeling a bit better that day and came down into the garden. It was a pleasant day, and there were about 30 householder devotees gathered, and he offered them liberation. Never think for a moment that potential, that possibility ended on January 1st, 1886. It still exists for us. So are there any other announcements that I should have made that I didn't make? Yes, Uma.
Sunday 23rd, what is happening?
On Sunday the 23rd will be the second talk of the Wizard of Oz. As I said, I did not take time because of other activities this week. We're going to have a different talk this morning, and that Sunday, the 23rd, will be the second. And it will be illustrated our projector will be set up, and there'll be the illustrations from Baum's book and so on. That's one of the reasons. It's a more complex talk than usual, so I just wasn't able to take the time this week. So if there's nothing else, thanks for asking that, Uma. If there's nothing else, then we will begin with our regular beautiful chant, acknowledging why we come here this morning. This is the translation by our beloved Swami Yogeshananda, the founder of this center. Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahano Vunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastu, Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. May the Divine Being look over us lovingly as a mother and father. May the Divine Being support and nourish us as a mother and father. May we have the strength and skill to study together the art of spirituality. May no misunderstandings arise amongst us. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto us and to all beings everywhere. Now, because I'm going to offer the talk, Christ the Messenger, this morning, as you can see, our Christmas tree has arrived. It will be decorated on Monday evening after Arati. We'll have some soup and other food in the monastery about 7:30, and then we'll come in here and decorate the tree. It just arrived yesterday afternoon, so Christmas has begun. So this is the lovely, very short, but poignant hymn that I'll sing for us this morning. The title is O Holy Night. O Holy Night, the stars are brightly shining. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in pain and error pining, till he appeared and the soul felt its worth. A thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious dawn. Fall on your knees, oh, hear the angel voices, O night divine, O night when Christ was born, O night divine, O night, O night divine. One of the most beautiful lines in all of the Christmas hymns is, till he appeared and the soul felt its worth. Indeed. Why? As Swami Prabhavananda pointed out, the chosen ideal is you yourself, no different. Learn to feel that living presence. So that's what it means. The soul felt its worth. It felt its identity with the divine. Again, this morning, welcome. December is a month for the study of Raja Yoga, a spiritual path often called the Yoga of Meditation. As a Raja Yogi, you use ancient, proven spiritual techniques to quiet your mind and gain control of your attention. Regular daily practice of Raja Yoga increases your ability to concentrate and may lead to meditation. This can unite you with the Divine Presence, the source of your being, and liberate you from the cycle of birth and death. So as I said, this topic this morning would have been next Sunday's talk, except that, as I said, I wasn't able to take time to prepare the second part of the Wizard of Oz talk. So we're going to speak this morning on Christ the Messenger. What is a messenger, an incarnation, an avatar? This is from our Vespers hymn, Breaker of This World's Chain, by Swami Vivekananda. Singing to Sri Ramakrishna, he wrote, how great was thy sacrifice, freely choosing thy birth in this prison, our iron age, to unchain us and set us free. So much about the Master's life and being are implied by just these few phrases. Yet for you and me, the key words may be, set us free. Vivekananda says an incarnation of God has the absolute power to free us from bondage to ignorance, suffering, and death. The incarnation of God has the absolute power to free us from bondage to ignorance, suffering, and death. On Kalpataru Day, January 1st, we'll talk about that extraordinary hour when Sri Ramakrishna fully revealed his fulfillment of that promise. Vivekananda believed that to do this work, free us from bondage, Divine Mother herself, he also speaks of her as nature or prakriti, Divine Mother herself is born into our world from time to time. She takes human form as her daughters and sons, Sitaram, Radha Krishna, Mary and Jesus, Sharada Devi and Sri Ramakrishna. Just think, these pairs that come, they offer us liberation. To help awaken us, these extraordinary beings say startling things. For example, Christ affirmed these lines from Psalm 82. In Psalm 82, the Divine Presence is speaking. They do not know, nor do they understand. They walk about in darkness. I said, you are gods, and all of you are sons of the Most High. The reason Christ mentioned this is he was speaking to his disciples who asked him, who are we? And he said, tell people you are children of the light. Children of the light. We are one with our parents. We are of our parents. He is speaking of the parent, the impersonal God, as the light. You are children of the light. And so in the psalm it says, you are gods. All of you are sons of the Most High. This is what is said to awaken our sense, that the soul may feel its worth. And Jesus himself promised, in the world you will have trouble, but take courage, for I have conquered the world. Jesus also said, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. For where two or three have gathered together in my name, I am there in their midst. Yea, I am with you always, until the very end of time. I'll talk more about those four promises, those four sayings of Jesus in a bit. In January of 1900, in Pasadena, California, Swami Vivekananda gave a talk called Christ the Messenger. The Swami said, the 3 years of Christ's ministry were like one compressed, concentrated age, which it has taken 1900 years to unfold, and who knows how much longer it will yet take. But mark this giant that came. Centuries and ages pass, yet the energy that he left upon the world is not yet stretched, nor yet expanded to its full. It goes on adding new vigor as the ages roll on. And as we can see in the 118 years since Swamiji spoke that, Christianity continues. The followers of Christ continue to change and expand and learn to more greatly embody the teachings. As many of you know, there are some really great Christian teachers teaching these days. Cynthia Bourgeau, Father Rohr, and then just recently passed Father Thomas Keating. Any of you who wish to understand modern Christianity, look at these three. It is really quite inspiring. Cynthia Bourgeau, Father Richard Rohr, and Father Thomas Keating. Many others, of course, but Thomas Merton, of course, could be added to that list. Later, as I said, I will talk about those quotes from Jesus and discuss other aspects of the divine incarnation we celebrate at this holy season of the year. But first this, it's from the divine incarnation or avatara, a class Vivekananda gave in New York City. You can find this in his Complete Works, Volume 8. Please note that the Swami was speaking to Christians. Jesus Christ was God, the personal God become man. He has manifested himself many times in different forms, and these alone are what you can worship. God in his absolute nature is not to be worshipped. Worshipping such a God would be nonsense. We have to worship Jesus Christ, the human manifestation, as God. You cannot worship anything higher than the manifestation of God if you want to hold on to a spiritual life, cling close to God as manifest in Christ. The lowest state of philosophical religion is dualism. The highest form is the triune state, the Trinity. Nature and the human soul are interpenetrated by God, and this we see as the Trinity of God. God, nature, and soul. This we see as the Trinity of God, nature, and soul. At the same time, you catch a glimpse that all these three are the products of the One. Just as this body is the covering of the soul, so this is, as it were, the body of God. As I am the soul of nature, so is God the soul of my soul. You are the center through which you see all nature. This nature, soul, and God make one individual being, the universe. Therefore, they are a unity, yet at the same time, they are separate. There is another sort of Trinity which is much like the Christian Trinity. God is absolute. We cannot see him in his absolute nature. We can only speak of that in the negative, as not this, not this. Yet we can get certain qualities as the nearest approach to God. First is existence. Second is knowledge. Third is bliss. Very much corresponding to your Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. Father is the existence out of which everything comes. Son is that knowledge. It is in Christ that God will be manifest. God was everywhere in all beings before Christ, but in Christ we became conscious of him. This is God. The third is bliss, the Holy Spirit. As soon as you get this knowledge, you get bliss. As soon as you begin to have Christ within you, you have bliss. That unifies the three. And that's exactly what Swami Prabhavananda was speaking about when he said, the chosen ideal is you yourself, no different. Learn to feel that living presence. As soon as you begin to have Christ within you, you have bliss. And that unifies the three, as Vivekananda said. So this is why, this is the profound reason why Christ is, as it says in the song, Christ is also our Savior. There are not two Vishnus. Vishnu is that aspect of the divine which takes human form. Vishnu is the aspect of the divine which is specifically tasked with sustentation and protection. It is for our sustentation and our protection, our awakening to our true nature, that these avatars come. And the beauty of it is the messengers come to find us where we are. We are, each one of us, entirely and utterly unique. Entirely and utterly unique. We are an aspect of the illimitable divine presence. Each one of us. So the messengers come to find us where we are. Vivekananda said Jesus taught according to the capacity of his listeners. Vivekananda said that Jesus taught according to the capacity of his listeners three spiritual paths: dualistic, qualified non-dual, and non-dual. We're familiar with these in Jesus' terms. Ye are the fruit. I am the vine and ye are the branches. The first, ye are the fruit. This is the dualistic. I am the vine, ye are the branches, qualified non-dualism. And then I and my Father are one. And be ye one with the divine. Be ye perfect, complete, whole. As your Father is in heaven is whole, perfect. This is exactly parallel to what Hanuman said when Rama asked him, Hanuman, how do you see me? And Hanuman answered, when I am in my normal frame of consciousness, I am the servant and you are the master. When I am in meditation, when I have gone within, I see that I am a part and you are the whole. When I am in the transcendent state, I know that you and I are one. So these are very familiar to us, the dualistic, qualified non-dual and non-dual. Ye are the fruit, I am the vine, ye are the branches, I and my Father are one. Vivekananda said, suppose Jesus of Nazareth was teaching, and a man came and told him, what you teach is beautiful. I believe that it is the way to perfection, and I am ready to follow it. But I do not care to worship you as the only begotten Son of God. What would be Jesus' answer? Very well, brother. Follow the ideal and advance in your own way. I do not care whether you give me the credit for the teaching or not. I only teach truth, and truth is nobody's property. Truth is God himself. Go forward. Each of us in our own way. Worship of the personal God, or following the ideal that truth is God itself. These are two very different practices. The first is the devotional path, the way of bhakti yoga. The second is the way of knowledge, jnana yoga. As taught by Sri Ramakrishna, and for that matter by Jesus, as taught by Sri Ramakrishna, both these paths are non-dual and lead to the exact same realization of God or God consciousness. I said we'd return to Jesus' promises. When they are understood, assimilated, and that's what Sri Ramakrishna always said about all these things that we're taught. Don't just know them, assimilate them. What does assimilation mean? When you take food, you don't just take it in your mouth. You chew it, you swallow it, and your body makes it part of you. The sustenance, the nutrition, is assimilated. This is what Sri Ramakrishna meant. Take these things in. Make them part of you. Make them part of your everyday being, doing. So when Jesus' promises are understood, assimilated, they are important reasons for us to worship this manifestation of the personal God, Emmanuel, God with us, pleased, as it says in the hymn, pleased as man with man to dwell. Jesus said, in this world you will have trouble, but take courage, for I have conquered the world. Now, was he just boasting? No. What Jesus was saying when he said, take courage, for I have conquered the world, I can share it with you. As it said, as I quoted earlier, Sri Ramakrishna was said by Vivekananda to have come, to have taken birth deliberately in this time, in order to unchain us and set us free. So take courage, for I have conquered the world, and I can share that conquest with you. How? Ask. Ask, and it will be given unto you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and the door will be opened to you. Can we ask but once? No. We have to ask until we do find. We have to ask until it is given to us. This means daily spiritual practice. Daily. It's like Sri Ramakrishna says, when the child comes in wanting to, the wind is blowing and the child wants to fly a kite, and the child goes to his mother and says, Mother, give me a coin to go buy a kite. And his mother says, No, I'm talking to my friends, go away. And the child says, No, mother, please, come on, give me a coin. The wind is blowing, I want to go buy a kite in a few minutes. No, mother, no, mother, now. So finally she goes to her box and she gives him a coin. He goes and buys the kite. This is Sri Ramakrishna's little parable of the necessity for asking. Till our sincerity is understood and we're given what we're asked for. The breeze of grace is always blowing. Let us go fly our kite. Ask and it will be given unto you. Seek and ye will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. And then this stupendous promise. And think of this now. Think of this in terms of what we're experiencing this very moment. For where two or three have gathered together in my name, I am there in their midst. So many Christians will tell you, those who pray together, those who gather together, that they feel this living presence. This is a truth. And then, yea, I am with you always until the very end of time. So because Christ lived 2,000 years ago, odd, doesn't mean that he's gone anywhere. Some of you have heard me tell this story of Swami Swahananda. One day he and I were walking. It was a nice afternoon. We were walking along and I was telling him about a talk that I was going to give to the campus ministers. I was at that time serving as a campus minister at Cal State Long Beach in California. And the topic that we were each to speak on was, will the real divine incarnation please stand up? And so I was going to speak on Christ, but I was going to speak on Christ as the principle, the Son of God, that triune God as knowledge embodied as Christ. And the Swami was listening and being appreciative. Yes, this is all fine, yes. But then he stopped and turned to me as he would do when there was something he wanted to impart. And so I turned to face him, and he said, looking directly into my eyes, we are each called upon to be a Christ. We are each called upon to be a Christ. Now, this coming from the disciple of a direct disciple of Sri Ramakrishna, Swami Swahananda's teacher was Swami Vijnananda. Swami Vijnananda was the last of the monastic disciples of Sri Ramakrishna, the last to come. So this is how direct that teaching is. Swami Swahananda said, we are each called upon to be a Christ. The Swami's call is to manifest that nuanantui. The Swami's call is to manifest that non-duality, the deepest truth of your being, by doing, by offering up your life every day as much and as best you can for the good of your fellow human beings. Why? As Vivekananda says in Karma Yoga, it isn't so you'll be a good person. The opportunity to serve in this way, to work to become a Christ, is to transform yourself, is to become less and less the victim of selfishness. As Swami Vivekananda said, selfishness is not religion. Selflessness is religion. In the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus says, this is verse 25, for whoever will save his life shall lose it, and whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it. For what shall it profit you if you gain the whole world and lose your own soul? Christ knew that he was going to be crucified. He knew he would die this horrible death if he did what he did in those 3 years. He knew what would happen to him. And he did it anyway. He did it anyway. So if we can, just in some small measure, give of ourselves to others, love thy neighbor as thyself, then we will be transformed. And the meaning of this season of the year will become so abundantly clear to us. Why Jesus Christ, after 2,018 years, is still revered. Yes, it's become commercial. Yes, it's become corrupted. So what? That doesn't need to mean anything to you. We're going to decorate that tree. It will be beautiful. It's a pagan celebration of this time of year. And it's done because it's beautiful, because it is symbolic of the sacrifice of the tree. All of those things. But the real reason for thinking about Jesus Christ at this time of year is because Jesus, like all of the other great teachers, can lead us away from that which has us enthralled, entrapped, in bondage, and free us. They have that gift. Ask and ye shall receive. Jai Yesudeva. Jai Yesudeva. Jai Yesudeva. Now the hope is that talking for these minutes has given rise to something in you, that there's something that you would like to say for yourself and to the others who are here today, or some question you'd like to ask about something that was said. Please be bold, be straightforward. What did this give rise to? Yes, Brad.
In Swami Vivekananda's lecture about the avatar, he said you cannot worship the absolute. That's why God gives us Christ, right?
Mm.
Well, what about the Jews who lived before Christ? What did they worship?
They worshipped the personal God as Yahweh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. There was very ceremonial. The temple was a place of great ceremony, but very parallel to what we see in India. And though there was, they still practiced animal sacrifice, which has not been done in India.
Did Yahweh have an image? Like
No. But it was impersonal. It was an impersonal in the sense of no image. The Ark of the Covenant and the Torah are the two Judaic symbols of God. There is no image of Yahweh. So yes, the Jews did worship very ardently. But that too had become corrupt by the time of Christ, which is why he chased the merchants out of the temple. Good question. Somebody else? Yes, in the back.
Thank you very much for your presentation. You know, I'm a little disappointed not to hear about the Wizard of Oz.
You'll just be here next week. I reaffirm my promise to give that talk. And I understand you're disappointed. I'm disappointed, too. I was looking forward to it. There just wasn't time.
But I must say, your substitute talk was actually not the least bit disappointing.
It Thank you.
Very, very full. And I find it especially, as someone who was raised as a Roman Catholic, and, you know, kind of all the tradition of the what's called the exclusivistic Christology.
Mm-hmm.
You know that there's just the one incarnation, and I don't know if it has to do with the era that I was born in terms of more of a pluralistic age, but I had some innate, since I was about my late teens or even, probably late teens, I had an innate sense that somehow could not be true.
Yes.
You know, and I always tried to kind of force myself into that pigeonhole of, well, no, this is the one exclusive, and, you know, and it really has been freeing, and to realize that I wasn't the one who was fixated on a stubborn, you know, and I would have Christians, well, Orthodox, so we will pray for you. We will hope that you get that you see the light. We hope we will. You know, they will pray for me in a kind of an arrogant, condescending way.
Yes.
So I have developed a little bit of a trigger reaction to any reference to John 3:16.
Yeah.
You know, people would ask.
Sure.
But anyway, it's a very beautiful talk, and I'm just. You know, I had the good fortune of going to the Ganges Retreat Center in Michigan when I was in my early 20s. And I knew that it fit, but I really didn't. I only wish I had embraced it more completely at an earlier age. You know, your mention of the evolution of Christian dogma, of Christian teaching, that I'm on the mailing list for the St. Thomas Aquinas Center here at Emory.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, based on what the new Pope has said, they are dedicating it to an inter-dialogue between the world's religions. And they are starting to smell the coffee. that in a universalist perspective of truth, that things have to be modified from the old dogmas, have to give way to a deeper truth. And
as you learn more about that, please do bring it to our attention so that we can share it here, so that people can take advantage of that.
Thank you so much for your talk. I really appreciate Vivekananda and certainly the Vedanta as a higher truth than the one that my culture of origin taught me.
There's great genius in the Catholic Church. It just has to be followed so simple-heartedly. You know, yes, thank you, Paul. The Catholic Church of the Mass and the transubstantiation and the and communion and confession and being free by doing your penance, there's great genius in it. But unfortunately, because so many priests have not been tickled by God yet, as St. Francis of Avila said, they're mournful and gloomy and share guilt rather than joy. And yes, anybody else? Yes.
Oh, I was pointing to her, but I actually did want to say something too.
Yes.
Well, I have a kind of a funny short story to share from my childhood. And that song, "O Holy Night," one of my favorite, you know, Christmas songs.
Yes, me too.
In my basement, where I grew up, we had all records, you know, and a record player. And I started getting to an age where I was exploring a little. I guess I was 3 or 4, maybe. And we had, and it wasn't, I don't even think it was Christmas. I like went down there and I was like, I want to play some records. And I was like, you know, and so I pulled out this Christmas album. I think that was the first song. And it was sung by, you know, one of these great singers from like the 60s there.
Mm-hmm.
But the funny thing was that like my sister Tina, you know, about a year older than me, you know, what happened was, like, I played this song, "O Holy Night," and this was, like, when I was just beginning to, like, you know, you're at that age where you're just learning to appreciate things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, like, blew me away. Like, I was like, oh, my God, this is so beautiful, and this is so great. And my sister came down, maybe she heard me playing the record, and I said to her, you know, this is the greatest song in the world. And God bless her, you know, my sister, God bless her soul. She said, "No, it's not. No, it's not. This is the best song in the world," and it was Tina the Ballerina.
Well, she'd already gone on to other things. Yes. Thanks for sharing that story, James. Those early childhood memories of discovery of the sacred, though, are really beautiful. They really are.
Right. What's your disposition?
It was a spiritual experience for me, but I don't know if it was religious at the time, you know.
It was a sacred experience.
And, yeah, and the music and the words. And
sacred is very different than religious.
Well, that sounds like a samskara from a past life, like you have that tendency to appreciate.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Anyone else? Yes, Uma.
Look, one of the points that you made, I don't even need.
Paul, that's Paul.
Yes. Claim of exclusivity.
Yes.
In Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a point that really bothers me. Bothers in the sense that, well, of course, in any religion, some kind of distortions of the original message that happens. But here, why doesn't Christianity focus, or should it have focused, on the teachings of Christ, which are so deeply Vedantic? If you, you know, we all know the Gospel, or all his statements, they remind us of Vedant principles.
Yes.
Because that way, in his sense, if you study Christ himself, it's no different than our philosophy of God and I are one, truth is one, and all that.
Well,
since which time the church started moving away from Christ to focus on, you know, not only exclusivity, but that Jesus is the only Son of God and only point of salvation. There cannot be salvation without Christ.
Well, Uma, let's not get too judgmental about this. Yes, it sounded very judgmental what you were saying. They should have done this. They shouldn't have done that.
In the sense that
Before we go too far down that road, let's look at the Orthodox and very fundamentalist Vaishnavas, who take exactly the same attitude toward Krishna as Vivekananda said. Fanaticism, he said, will be found in the final analysis to be a mental disease. And so that we find it everywhere. We find it in Judaism. We find it in Islam. We find it in Christianity. We find it in Vaishnavism, and we find it among the Shaivites. It is a disease of the mind to want to insist that we alone have the truth, and you must share our truth, or you are doomed. You are doomed for eternity. Well, yes. Yes, Brett.
If I could add to what my Aunt Paul said, I have had Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, and the Church of Scientology come to my house and pray for me and try to save me.
Mm-hmm.
It's scary what can happen. But Christ did say, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why a lot of them...
He said this. Krishna said this. But they're not. You see, they're not. This is why I mentioned. They are embodiments of Vishnu, the sustainer and protector, the one who is responsible for restoring virtue and dharma and righteousness when it declines. These are not two different beings. These are two different aspects of the same being speaking at different times. So they're saying the same message because people need to have something to believe in. And so they didn't intend for it to become this exclusivity. That was not their point. And they were speaking as the divine presence, after all, not as some personality.
And particularly, Sermon on the Mount.
Yes.
That's so pure.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, we see it as Vedantic because we see through that prism. This is why Swami Prabhavananda wrote that wonderful book, The Sermon on the Mount, according to Vedanta, so that people in Vedanta who had been Christian or who are Christian could have a look at it in that way. Yes, James.
I think it's wonderful to keep something to keep in mind. It's very wonderful that we have like the books, like the yogas, like that, which are very close translations from the original words. And with the Bible, I think you have a lot of problems with that. And I think it's important to keep that in mind.
Yes, the Aramaic...
translation issues are very questionable.
It got translated from Aramaic to Greek, Greek to German, English, these things, Latin. So, it gets tripped up along the way. But the basic message of Christ is very clear to us. Be ye whole. Be ye perfect as my Father in heaven is perfect. This means be awakened, be illumined. Robert, did you have something?
I think what is being said, it can be a bit confusing, but I think what is being said is if you are Christian, then what the gentleman stated is correct. The only way is through Christianity. If you are Hindu, then the only way is, like Vivekananda would say, is through Hinduism,
mm-hmm.
or Buddhism. And it's not a contradiction. Mm-hmm. It's just saying be true to who you say or think that you are.
Yes.
Yes.
So to thine own self be true. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
And that is absolutely it. There's no point in trying to embrace as a object of personal worship all of the different avatars. We can appreciate them. But this is why it's called the chosen ideal. That which your heart is drawn to. That which you choose by your inner inclination. And that then becomes the focus of your worship. Not in any exclusive sense, but simply because that is where your heart is.
As long as you don't deny it.
No, you, that's what Sri Ramakrishna said. No bigotry. Yes, dear, in the back.
What have Sri Ramakrishna or Swami Vivekananda said about future incarnations, if anything?
Oh, yes, Vivekananda said, and Sri Ramakrishna also said there would be many. This is, you know, Sri Ramakrishna specifically remarked on that one time. He said, some people say there will be 10, some people there will be 20-something. I forget what the 20 is, but 20-something. He said, there will be, and as long as there are human beings, there will be incarnations, because human beings go into decline and need to be raised up. We are, after all, as Holy Mother pointed out, we are a compound of goodness, materialism, and vanity. And so in time, materialism and vanity predominate in people, and so they need to be reawakened when they're ready, when they see the futility of pursuing. So there will be, and Vivekananda said that each, if you want to read Christ the Messenger, what he said is the destiny of each one of us to become as a Christ, which is what Swami Swahananda was also pointing to when he said, you know, don't be confused about your role. You know, you are called upon to be a Christ now or at some future time. There was someone else, yes?
Like you said, I came here to hear some fairy tale, Wizard of Oz and all that. But your talk today was not only interesting, it was very moving today. To put it shortly, it is like you connected my dots.
Mm.
Like I have this feeling that I love this, I love that, like a butterfly, appreciating everything. Like my childhood, I was very affected by Jesus Christ.
Mm.
And the sayings that you give your other cheek and I did it and got slapped and all that stuff. So it was like, oh my God, I didn't like that. So, but then later I liked Mother Teresa and Magdalena. And today when you were talking, I just found out, okay, the commonality is love.
Mm-hmm.
The unconditional love. You know, all of me loves all of you. This
mm-hmm.
inclusivity. So
yes.
Instead of seeing them as separate, mm-hmm. it was like, okay, so that's what... because in China, like he said, what the song, I was very connected and singing songs like the sharing and ask and you receive, like as if part of me was very American. And though I really love the Sanskrit mantras, my mom would say, but I would sing these rather than that.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever it is, like, it's all the same. Now, as I'm moving on, it's like, okay, instead of thinking it's different, it's all so same. It's all.
Whatever touches our heart, whatever makes our heart warm and expansive, that's what we need to follow. That which makes our heart cold and feel closed in, we should avoid. Follow that which makes your heart warm and expansive. And as you said, it's love. It is love. That's the final analysis. Yes, dear.
And that's why after going to many different places around Atlanta, this is home.
Yes.
This is the love.
Yes.
Jayama.
Yes.
Jayama. Yes, in the back.
I too have Catholic roots, so it's a little bit blasphemous for me to ask this. But I'm not there anymore, so I am going to ask. I know you know well that Vivekananda had a good buddy that he hung around with by the name of Nikola Tesla.
Yes.
We kind of got us a little Nikola Tesla in our time with Elon Musk. And it just really, for me, humanizes Vivekananda. And both Tesla somewhat too, though different men, kind of tuned in a deep way. Mm-hmm. I realize Christ had the disciples, and my training tells me that he kept them all at the same distance. So did Christ have a buddy? Yes, Vivekananda had a buddy not so long ago.
Yes, James the Elder, but also the beloved companion, Mary Magdalene. If you read the Gospel of the Beloved Companion, you see this intensely loving relationship, not a physical relationship, but one of very like Sita with Rama, very like Radha with Krishna. But James the Elder was, if you read the Gospel of Thomas, you find out more about James the Elder. And he's the one that Jesus said, you know, when after I'm gone, he's the one you should go to. And so, of course, they sidelined him.
Set him up.
Yeah. So, you know, but yes, Jesus had a close companion. His brother was also very close to him.
It seemed like he was close to Peter as well.
He had great regard for Peter. Peter is the rock. Peter is the one on whom the church would be founded. He knew what would happen to Peter. Yes, Sundar.
Brother, what is the relationship between the Christmas tree and the Christmas? Is it mentioned somewhere in the Bible?
No. It is, as I said earlier, it is a pagan symbol of Christmas. It has to do with the time of year. As we see all the trees outside, most of them have lost their leaves. They appear to be dead. This tree remains green throughout the winter. It is evergreen. And so the pagan symbolism is that of the everlasting light. This is why lights are put on it. If you study the Teutonic and the Scandinavian, in Scandinavia, a little girl with a crown that is made of candles comes in and lights the candles on. Happens in various times, but just say Christmas Eve, that's prevalent, lights all of the candles on the tree to symbolize the light returning. So the Christmas tree has become associated. It was only a relatively short time ago, in terms of hundreds of years, that it became associated with Christmas. Out of Germany into England, because the rulers of England were Germans at one time, the princes of the English throne were German, and so they brought with them this tree. And so it became prevalent in England, and so it became prevalent here. But as we decorate the tree, it's easy to think of the glory of the divine in the same way that you have lights for Diwali. We tend to not to put lights on the tree here. We put things that symbolize the lights, these glowing little orbs, Christmas decorations. But then we put something on the top that symbolizes divinity. So it's not a Christian thing per se.
Think about the five-pointed star on the top. You know, that's kind of a pagan symbol.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Yes, sir. Regarding Swami Sarvapriyananda's lectures on YouTube, I follow them.
Yes.
On non-dualism.
Good for you.
And non-dualism was relevant to all ages now more than ever. I'm really hoping if you can give a lecture on the self-inquiry, which I heard, and I would like to know more about that.
Well, let's see, Raja. The following month, January, will be a month for the study of Jnana Yoga. We definitely will take up Advaita, Jnana Yoga, Advaita, same thing. We take up the yogas month by month. Swami Vivekananda taught all four, because there are four temperaments. Obviously, your temperament is one that leans you toward Advaita. There are people here who are bhakti temperament. There are people here who have a karma temperament. There are people here who are naturally indrawn, have a raja temperament. So we try to serve us all. But as you'll notice, there was a mention of non-dualism in this. Sri Ramakrishna even taught bhakti as a non-dual practice. I'll take that up in January. Yes. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for the for that request. Anybody else? Yes, Uma?
In the beginning, you mentioned the difference between messenger and avatar.
No, there's no difference. They're the same.
You mentioned these two names.
Yes.
Messenger. That made me think about Islam. Islam accepts as a messenger the
Muhammad.
But not as avatar.
Well, it's
they draw a line. Messenger and all that.
They don't accept Jesus as avatar either.
Yes.
They accept Jesus, but not as an avatar.
Not as an avatar.
No, they don't accept the idea of avatar. The Sufi aspect of Islam.
But they are mystics.
Yeah, they accept. But the Orthodox Muslim does not accept the idea of avatar. Allah does not take human form. And if you remember, Vivekananda had a great deal of trouble himself with this idea of the infinite, the illimitable, taking a limited human form. It was very, very difficult for him to accept. And he finally did accept it, but it was... You know, he had very strong logical arguments against it. Yes, dear.
Talking about reincarnation, it's like I'm a Hindu and I believe in it, at the same time I don't believe. It's like
sure.
So I was wondering, like Jesus Christ was born 2,000 years back. So isn't his all the reincarnation? Is their soul the same, or have they reincarnated into something else? Like we just say, I tell people nowadays, I believe and say, oh, your mom, your father, whoever's died is still there. His presence is there. And the question most that comes in my mind when I'm telling it is, what after 10? After some time, they reincarnate into something else. So will the presence of that person, that your beloved person, still be there, or will it be lost because it's gone, taken another human form?
Let's just point to the recent example of Sri Ramakrishna. Sri Ramakrishna, when he was leaving the body, said, not at that very moment, but he told those close to him that he would take human form again in 200 years, and he pointed to the northwest. This is when he was still living at Dakshineshwar. He pointed to the northwest, which is Punjab, so to speak. And he said he would be reborn as a Baul. But Bauls are wandering minstrel singers. They travel about in bands, groups of people. They're not renunciates, they don't wear ochre clothing, they're not exactly householders either. They're wandering minstrels is what they are, but they sing holy songs. He said he would be reborn as a Baul in the northwest. But that he would be totally unknown. Now Christ said to his followers that he would be reborn, but they would not know when or where. Has Christ been reborn? We don't know. It's still a while till 2086, so there's going to be people, you can bet, scouring Punjab or the Northwest for Sri Ramakrishna. But you can bet that he, like Christ when he wanted to be, will be unknown. If he wishes to be unknown, he will be unknown. Yes, dear.
Are you referring to when he said that he would come again?
For Sri Ramakrishna, yes.
No, as far as Christ goes.
Yes, he said he would. He said he would be reborn, but
he said he would come again. But
come again.
I don't think that necessarily means that he would be reborn.
Well, that's something we can talk about that. What does it mean to come again? Does it mean that you will be reborn, or does it mean you will be born in people's hearts? There's been a lot of dialogue about that in the various Christian churches, particularly the Roman Catholic and Orthodox, other Orthodox churches. But it doesn't matter, does it? It doesn't matter. If we take Christ to our hearts, not exclusively, but if we just say at this time of year, I will hold Christ close to my heart, and I will say to him, share with me, as he said, if you want to be warm, sit close to the fire. This is one of the logians in Gospel of Thomas. If you sit close to the fire, so if you wish to be close to Christ, draw yourself near to him and see what happens. This is what Sri Ramakrishna said about the mystery of the divine. He said, if you want to know about the contradictions and the seeming paradoxes and so on, go close, go to the neighborhood of God, and all of these things resolve themselves. So it's within ourselves that we understand these things. Our minds are not capable. We have finite minds. We are not going to be able to understand the infinite, even when it takes human form. It's as close as we're going to get, according to Vivekananda. This is the closest we're going to get to understanding the divine, is to worship and draw ourselves near to the incarnations. And at this time of year, it really is good to draw yourself near to Christ and warm yourself at that fire, because there's so much to be gained there, so much to be gained. Yes?
There's a portion in the Gospel which really, Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, that appealed to me a lot, in the sense that it says, any body of water, the farther away you are, it appears blue,
mm-hmm.
but the closer you go and take it in your hand, it's clear.
Mm-hmm.
So the farther you are from God, you have all these
mm-hmm. exactly.
questions, and the closer you get, things move.
Exactly. The clarity comes when you are near.
You're talking about vows. Actually, I met one vow.
Did you?
On our way to Dakshineshwar. Mm. It rained. And they sing so beautifully.
Yes.
The devotional songs.
Yes.
And so they are still there.
And they play very simple instruments, but they play them so very well. For example, they play a one-stringed instrument.
Yeah.
Just a one-string, there's no frets, just a little tuning knob at the top to keep the string at the right timber. And then they just fret it with their finger like you would a string bass, an upright bass. And they play so beautifully on just that one-stringed instrument and a drum called a khol, K-O-H-L, khol. That is like it's like tabla, in that it has a big end and a little end, and it plays deep and bright, deep on one end and bright on the other. Beautiful, beautiful drumming. Yes, the Abaul group comes to the Hollywood Center. When they come to the United States, they visit the Hollywood Center, and they tour the world, but they're unusual. They're quite wonderful singing and playing.
Inspiring.
Anything else? Well, this is just exactly what I wanted to have happen. I always want to have happen is this wonderful conversation among us that we share ourselves with the rest of the congregation. Mm-hmm. Now we have something else to show. Oh, yes, Niranjana.
So when you gave the three different perspectives of qualified non-dualism, non-dualism, and dualism, when you talked about Hanuman and Christ and divinity, that's something that I really liked today. And my comment today was about the quote that you shared, ask and you shall receive, seek and you shall find it.
Knock and it shall be opened unto you.
Yes. So, for me, the most important thing, the challenge would be if I'm asking the right thing, if I'm seeking the thing that I should actually seek. So, every day when we pray, even though we can say that we would pray for so many other things which are actually not required, we would ask things that are not required, that are not right or not appropriate. So I think the practice of discrimination to be able to know what we are asking.
But you know, the thing, Niranjana, is not to overthink it. Ask, and then you'll find out if you're right or wrong. We don't learn by sitting in the grandstands. We learn by getting down and playing the game of life on the field of life. So ask, and then you'll find out, is this right or wrong? If we try to think and think and think, is this right or wrong? What'll happen is we just get confused. And the golfers call it, they have a wonderful term for it. They're trying to swing at the golf ball and they're thinking and thinking, and they call it paralysis by analysis. And it's so easy for us to fall into paralysis by analysis, particularly when we're intellectual by nature. So this is why karma yoga is so, so, so very important to each of us, not just the karma yogis. What does karma yoga say? You do, but you offer the doing to the divine. If the doing is an asking, you offer the asking to the divine. You offer the fruits of what you've asked for to the divine. Then you are, and this, just read chapter 3 of the Gita over again. Krishna is so explicit. Everything, without exception, we are to offer to the divine. Then we are not responsible for the outcome. That is, the karma is not ours. It isn't that we don't deal with the outcome, but it isn't our karmic debt. It isn't our karmic responsibility. And so as we go ahead, it's far better to learn by doing than try to learn just by thinking. Of course we have to think things through. But if we think that we can calculate consequences, we're mistaken. We do not know what will happen as the result of our actions. We simply do not know. So trying to calculate it and control it is not only a mistake in the sense of ultimately futile mistake, but it is a tremendous waste of time if we try to control everything that happens. So it's frustrating, particularly for those of us who have that kind of nature. But it is one of the lessons to learn from karma yoga. And chapter 3 of the Gita is just absolutely so instructive. Krishna is uncompromising. Offer it every little bit to me. Then whatever happens, take it as my prasad. Take it as my gift back to you. Wonderful. Glad you asked the question. Is there any more? Did I interrupt you too soon? Okay. Yes, dear.
I understand what you're saying, but that whole act of doing this offering may be difficult because when we say offer, we say it's a physical thing. So offer, just by saying it's yours, it gets done. That's it, the intention.
If you stop and begin, by stop, I mean just stop your normal way of doing things. My normal way of doing things is just to do them. This is, now it's time to do this, now it's time to do this. If I stop when I wake up in the morning and I say, all right, Lord, this is your day. Everything that happens in this day is offered to you. All of the actions, all of the outcomes, they are thine. I offer them to thee. Om Swaha. Om Swaha is a very important part of this. You'll find that something happens if you say Om Swaha. You'll find if you do this repetitively. Then you go to take a cup of tea or coffee. Before you drink the tea or coffee, you say, this coffee is thine. It is offered to thee. Om Swaha. Then you take the coffee as the prasad. Same with what you eat. And now I say, to get the full meaning of what I'm talking about, go and look at that long catalog, which is very comprehensive, that Krishna offers in chapter 3 of the Gita. It's very comprehensive. It's surprisingly comprehensive because it involves things that we wouldn't ordinarily think of offering to the Lord. Yes, dear.
That's why, I mean, I love reading the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. It's just to Girish Ghosh, who used to drink a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of the disciples were asking, why don't you tell him to stop? So he says, no. So what instead he tells him is, take the wine as an offering from the
mm-hmm.
divine.
Mm-hmm.
And so over time, I think, but he just says, don't drink too much so you lose your awareness. And
your wits, yeah.
But then over time, his life is transformed.
Yes, so it began to be that when Girish Ghosh would drink, he would see the master's face in the bottom of the cup. This is his testimony. So... Yeah.
After the Wednesday talk we had, and you said about this offering,
mm-hmm.
like offer everything, the good and the bad. I wake up a little late, so this time I tried a couple of times, like, okay, this is offered to you, my procrastination and my getting up late, whatever
mm-hmm.
I was thinking. And it felt better. For the very least, it felt that, you know, mm-hmm. I don't have to take the whole weight on my shoulder.
No, this is...
Not negative, you know. I'm always whipping myself.
Now keep it up. Now keep it up, dear. Just
yeah,
keep it up.
That's my problem.
Keep it up. Keep it up. Keep it up.
Yeah.
Spiritual practice is not a sometime thing. No effort is wasted. That is also true. Krishna promises that. No effort is wasted. But the clarity comes from repeated practice. Until you begin to, by repeated practice, begin to sense the true meaning of what you're doing. And it comes to you because, as Vivekananda says, the knowledge is within. The knowledge doesn't come from without. The knowledge is within. It's only covered up by our ways, our traditional, our habitual ways of doing things. So when we begin to do something different, something else spontaneously emerges. And it emerges quite forcefully.
Yes.
If you persist. That's why I said what I said to Paul about the genius of the Catholic Church. If you really do go to Mass every day, and you go to confession every Saturday, and you do your penance every morning, and you take the communion, and so on, Something happens to you. You become a different person. And so, but is it complicated? Yes. It's simple, but it's not easy. Yes, dear.
So that kind of offering does that sort of lead to an excuse? You know, you keep on getting up late every day and say, okay, I offer it. Or does the transformation happen because you're giving it?
Do it and see. Do it and see. My assertion is the only true measure of spiritual progress is change in behavior. It's, I didn't invent that. That came to me from Swami Swahananda. The only true measure of spiritual progress is change in behavior. If you keep offering what you're doing to the Lord, good, bad, or indifferent, and I mean, Sri Ramakrishna is so explicit in the gospel about what he means by this. Again, it has to do with offering things that we wouldn't normally think of offering to the Lord. What happens is your understanding of who you are and what you're doing changes by this very act. But it has to be repeated. It has to become habitual. It has to become something that you do instead of what you did before. And something happens. Something reveals itself. And when we get judgmental of ourselves, we're automatically diminishing ourselves. If we diminish ourselves, what does that mean? We get smaller. We don't want to be smaller. We want to be bigger. We want to be so big that the net of Maya will not hold us. So this is why Sri Krishna says what he says. And it's all there, as Uma pointed out earlier, it's all there in the Sermon on the Mount according to Jesus. But it needs to be unpacked. It's very condensed. This was to his close disciples. He took his close disciples up on the Mount and gave them this teaching. It wasn't for the multitudes. And so this is why I recommend anybody who wants to understand the Sermon on the Mount, read Swami Prabhavananda's book, The Sermon on the Mount, according to Vedanta. He unpacks it for us.
Gandhiji loved Sermon on the Mount.
Yes.
He interpreted and compared it with Gita.
Yes, yes. Well, there was many, many comparisons, yes. All right. In the monastery, yes, Lori.
Okay. Can you just briefly explain Swaha?
Swaha. Swaha is a bija. It doesn't mean anything. If it's, you can loosely say it means so be it, but it actually is a bija that encapsulates the act of offering to the divine. And it's so that it is perfectly released from you. And it is Mother herself in the form of sound. That's what the Mother Scriptures say. You are Swaha and Swadha. This is what Brahma says to her. In one of the opening hymn of the Chandi. It is Mother herself in the form of sound. So when you say Om Swaha, you are taking the absolute impersonal and the absolute personal in the form of Mother. And that is, you've released it totally thereby.
Yeah. In the old Vedic times, everything they offer in yajna, that fire sacrifice, Om Swaha, that means I offer.
But that isn't the meaning of the word. That is the meaning of the action. The Swaha is a name of Mother herself.
That's true. One interpretation in Sanskrit, Swaha, Swa means I, myself. I offer it at your feet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. I just love it that you all are willing to sit here and do this together. This is exactly what's meant. Let us have the strength and skill to study together the art of spirituality. It is so wonderful. Yes, dear.
The audio gives a tape of your talks, but it doesn't give the discussion.
Yes, it does.
It does?
Mm-hmm. The question and answers at the end.
I think what my experience is because we don't speak loudly enough, sometimes the questions are not clear.
Yes. But I don't want to repeat them. Your comment contains the solution. Speak loudly.
Yeah, definitely.
I know it's difficult. You know, most people don't. You know, speaking in public is difficult for most people. That's why it's so hard to get these discussions started. But once we're started, you know, just speak loudly. Cindy does the best she can to raise the volume up for the question. You know, the answer is it's right here, but you know, just try and speak up. And some people don't have a resonant voice, you know, so it's the voice doesn't carry. All right.
Timid in asking.
Let us just cherish one another and this activity of. And now we can continue this in the monastery as pleases ourselves. So I'll close with our regular closing chant. Again, a translation by Swami Yogeshananda of an ancient Sanskrit prayer. Let there be peace in outer space.
Let there be peace in outer space.
Let there be peace in the sky, on the earth, and in the waters.
Let there be peace on the sky, on the earth.
Let there be peace in the herbs, the plants, and the trees.
Let there be peace in the herbs, the plants, and the trees.
May the gods be peaceful.
May the gods be peaceful.
May the whole universe be pervaded by peace.
May the whole universe be pervaded by peace.
Let this infinite universal peace prevail throughout my being. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om peace, peace, peace be unto us and to all beings everywhere. Jai, Jai, Jai. Om Jai Yesudeva.